Hey everyone, welcome back to episode 3 of Uncapped. Today's episode I'm pretty excited for, so thanks for tuning back in. If you did not listen to episode 1 or 2 yet, it's on the internet forever, so you can listen at Uncapped at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Let's get to today's episode. Like I just said, I'm pretty excited for it because I've been on a big kick with these types of movies. Before we get into the whole theme of today's episode, we're just gonna go over some movie news that I just saw online that I thought was interesting and maybe some people would like to hear about it. So first off, Sadie Sink, aka the redhead from Stranger Things, for those that aren't really familiar with her, is set to star alongside Tom Holland in Spider-Man 4. This movie probably will not come out until late 2026 or early 2027, but still very exciting. I love the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies and Sadie Sink. If you've seen her in Stranger Things or in The Whale, she's a great actress, so that's going to be something exciting. Something not so exciting is that since Netflix loves to do 8 million remakes, Stephen King's Cujo will be remade as a Netflix adaptation. Curious to see how this will go. I feel like Netflix has had a pretty bad streak lately with some remakes, and Stephen King's Cujo is a classic, so that's going to be interesting to see how that all boils down. But in other news, what we really care about, the Uncapped news, for today's episode, we're going to talk about international films. I watched international films all last week just by my own choice because honestly, they're amazing and I don't want to hear or see, I should say, anyone rolling their eyes saying that it's dumb and they don't want to hear about it because truthfully, these types of movies are amazing. Some of the best movies I've ever watched have been in languages I do not know and with subtitles I have to read. Once you get over watching your first foreign movie and watch and read all those subtitles, you'll get over it and start liking them, and I stand by that. But for today's episode, I thought it'd be fun if I boiled down what I thought, in my opinion, was the top four, like Letterboxd likes to do, top four international movies of all time. I watched probably 15 of them last week. Some would say that's dedication. Others would say that's just post-grad life and having nothing better to do with their time off. Again, we're gonna go and see my personal favorites and why they're my personal favorites with some of these conclusions and hopefully inspire some of you guys to watch these movies or some international films in general. So, let's get to it. Really quickly before we begin, something I also thought would be fun if we do on the podcast is a little... It doesn't have to be in regards to the theme of the episode, but a little classic rewatch that I recommend. Last night, I watched Kill Bill Volume 1 by Quentin Tarantino, and I think rewatching it solidified that that's one of my favorite movies of all time. Starring Uma Thurman, I'm sure almost everyone knows or has heard of Kill Bill. It is an absolutely fire movie, so that's just my recommendation for the week that's not in theme of today's episode. Okay, so starting off with number 4, we're going to go in descending order for what I think deserves the title of fourth best international film of all time. All right, so number 4, drum roll. We are going to go with Anatomy of a Fall from 2023. This film is spoken in French and it's also dubbed in English, by the way, so... there's a little easy way out for those that don't want to read this movie, but it is an amazing movie. I must say that at first watch, it didn't really stick with me. I wasn't loving the pace, but I rewatched it and did understand the hype of why this won so many awards. It won the Palme d'Or and Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay last year. It is a great movie. So this film was directed by Justine Triet. She's a French filmmaker. This is the first movie of hers that I've seen. I probably will go back and see what else she's got going on because this movie was amazing. It was not based on true events, but she really just took a lot of information of what she knew about the French legal system and just a lot of stories about real crime dramas and kind of made her own masterpiece, which I think is very inspiring. For those that are a fan of like courtroom dramas or a thriller-esque situation, this is definitely the movie for you. while it starts off with those subgenres, it definitely dives into something much more deeper with complex relationships between a mother, son, and deceased husband. If you're like, wow, deceased, let me tell you what the plot is quickly. Okay, so the plot of Anatomy of a Fall is as such. The plot follows Sandra, or Sandra, if you care about pronunciation, a German novelist, as she is accused of murdering her husband, Samuel, who dies in the fall from their isolated chalet, and their partially sighted son, Daniel, as the sole witness, leads to a trial that unravels all their relationships. If you aren't really grabbed based off of that just mini plot and mini overview of the plot, then I'm not really sure, because truthfully, if you don't really like these types of movies in general, that overview is just something to raise an eyebrow. I think gets anyone interested. I think the director and writers did a great job with just grabbing the audience right from the get-go with that overview. And I must say, nobody ever expects one of their favorite performances of the year to be between a border collie and a child with a Gene Belcher, that's a Bob's Burgers reference, a Gene Belcher haircut. But you know what? Here we are. Anatomy of a Fall, the son and the dog did a great job. So many reviews I saw that had me laughing were that the dog definitely deserves Best Supporting Actor of last year's Oscars. Alas, he did not win, but still a great film. Additionally, with this film, the beauty honestly really lies how it's paced throughout. It's a little slow at first with that courtroom drama, but then it just, like I said, unravels to so much more. Even when it takes the shape of this drama appeal with the great attention to detail, it still rests firmly on the emotional bonding between the lead characters in this case, the mother and her son, because I'm not going to spoil anything, but the son has to basically decide between, you know, his moral obligations and his relationship with his mom, because he is partially sighted. So you don't really understand what's going to happen until you watch it. I won't try and explain much more, but it really was a very, very intriguing watch. It definitely deserved all the accolades it got last year. And again, if anyone's interested in, I guess we can call it a crime, if you're interested in SVU, then you absolutely should be interested in this. It's not the same thing at all, but if you can sit and watch 8 million episodes of the same vibe of SVU Law and Order, you can absolutely sit through this 2.5 hour watch, because it was awesome. And I'm going to leave it at that, since it won fourth place in our Uncapped Awards. But again, I would give Anatomy of a Fall 4 stars. Maybe if I rewatched it again, it would get 5 stars, but it's a pretty good movie, and everyone should definitely take the honor of witnessing this movie for the first time. All right, friends, now moving on to our bronze medal, aka our third place winner of the Uncapped title of third best international film of all time. This might be a little controversial, but stay with me. I'm going to have to give this award to Amélie from 2001. This movie is spoken in French, and it's definitely a little out there, but it is very lighthearted, very fun. And I think that anyone who likes a nice little rom-com, not saying it's that, rom-com, or I guess something sentimental, would find the true beauty of this movie, maybe even tear up a little bit. It really is a beautiful film. So this movie, like I just said, from 2001, spoken in French, was directed by, I might butcher this name just because I am not French, Jean-Pierre Jeunet. Hopefully that's correct. I loved this movie when I first watched it. I had a poster of IMDb's top 100 films of all time, and this movie was on here, so I was very curious what the hype about some French comedy slash romance movie was about. I watched it. I absolutely loved it. It's just one of those movies that captivates you right away, especially because of how lighthearted it is and just the emotional investment you get in the main character. So, like I just said, it was kind of a comedy and romance movie as just its overview subgenres, but the plot is centered around Amélie, who's the main character. It's a comedy about a young woman who discreetly orchestrates the lives of people around her, creating a world exclusively of her own making. Basically, she finds this box in her old Parisian apartment, and I don't want to spoil anything if anyone's compelled to watch it, but the story unfolds from there, and just as she's kind of orchestrating what happens to the lives around her, like trying to make other people's days a little bit better, there's this kind of romance aspect of this movie that gets thrown into it, where Amelie is trying to find this specific man that she saw a photo of him in a photo booth. So she's trying to find him throughout the movie. Very beautiful. The big romance plot throughout the movie is something that draws anyone in. I feel like anyone can be a sucker for romance. So that's also why I think this movie just stands out as a very fun watch. Even though it's a fun watch, the message behind Amelie is that you should live your life with simplicity. Meaning, when Amelie started to do things for others, her whole life started to change just by those small acts of helping other people, which I think is very kind and a nice message that the director was trying to get by. And like I was saying, the movie's definitely a little quirky. I think I watched this when I was 17 and I was freaked out. Not freaked out, but it was just a little weird. I wasn't really watching any foreign films at that time, so I didn't really know what I was getting into. But it's so heartwarming and just something, like, I would say that's a film that I hold dear to my heart. It's one that I'm not going to watch that many times just because I don't want to ruin it by watching it that many times, but it's beautiful. It's so fun. And also, for anyone that is obsessed with the romanticism behind Paris, this film was shot in over 80 Parisian locations to draw the audience into, like, the beauty and the charm of quote-unquote modern-day Paris. And I say quote-unquote because this movie did come out 20 years ago. But Amelie is beautiful. I do believe, I'm going to have to fact check this. I should have been prepared. Sorry, guys. I do believe it won either Best Picture or Best International Feature from the Oscars of either, I would say, 2002. Great, great movie. I hope that anyone who doesn't really like to sit through a serious movie would be able to find the beauty of Amelie and sit through this one. That's why I kind of put it in that list, because normally when you think of international films, I think a lot of people think, oh, it's either going to be some serious crappy drama or just something that I'm not going to be interested in when I can watch something very similar in English. But I guess the only word to describe or to conclude my love of Amelie is just it's magic. It is a great movie. And again, if you are one for lighthearted, not something that serious, this is definitely a comfort movie, something that you could watch anytime. And I highly recommend. So congratulations, Amelie. Cue the clapping. As Uncap's third place winner of Best International Feature of all time. All right, guys, we're getting down to the wire here with number two, I guess the silver medal, you would say, or runner up for Best International Film of all time. I might get some hate on this because someone consider this is probably the best international film of all time. I definitely think it's up there, but just for me, not my personal favorite, but still amazing. And this movie is City of God from 2002. This movie is spoken in Portuguese as it is set in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. When I first saw this movie when I was 16, I was not really into this film. I think I was way too young to watch it, or I guess just to understand what the film was trying to go for. And if you were 16 when you watched this for the first time and you understood all the messages, congratulations, good for you. That was just not me. But a few months ago in a history class I had, I was asking my friend for some movie recommendations, and he said his favorite movie of all time was City of God. And I naturally just felt compelled to rewatch this because I was thinking, how come a movie that I just did not vibe with, that is accredited by many, is also my history class friend's favorite movie? And you know what? After the rewatch, everyone was absolutely right, because this movie is incredible. I think a big reason why this movie is loved by so many is just the realness of the movie. And once I get into the plot, you'll kind of understand a little bit more about what I'm saying. So let me just get into the plot. So in the poverty-stricken favelas of Rio de Janeiro in the 1970s, two young men chose different paths. So we have Rocket, who is a budding photographer who documents these increasing drug-related violence in his neighborhood. And then our opposing character, Jose, or Zay is his nickname, is an ambitious drug dealer who uses Rocket and his photos as a way to increase his fame as a turf war erupts with his rival. And the film was shot in real locations of Rio's poorest neighborhoods. So like I just said, the rawness and realness of this movie is why I think it's so accredited and something beloved by many. It just accurately depicts how harsh the realities of life in these poor Brazilian areas are without making it seem so overall romanticized. That's a big thing that I think Hollywood likes to do. They like to romanticize things that are actually horrific. I'm not saying that the mafia is absolutely horrific, but when you watch Goodfellas, The Godfather, and not a movie, but The Sopranos, you're very compelled to wanting to be a part of that mob, or you just think it's so cool when that is not the reality of it. Because that's what Hollywood likes to do. The director didn't do that. I think another big reason why he didn't romanticize it is because while this movie isn't based on a true story, it's loosely drawn up from a lot of his experiences growing up. So that is also something I think is really remarkable and why he doesn't romanticize the harsh realities of it. And another thing, they make it clear that the real root of these harsh realities is largely and almost mainly due to the drug corruption in these areas, which I think is also something really nice that they were able to portray, because it is a really big issue there, especially during that time as well. So highlighting that is something that I think sticks with people, and another reason why it's a beloved film around the world. Now, some underlying themes of the movie that make it worth your watch is, for starters, the loss of innocence. This film focuses on the loss of innocence and the early maturity forced upon these kids growing up in these environments, where I guess survival depends on the violence and ruthlessness of these characters, or just people in general. I will say, loss of innocence, like, anyone can see that throughout the movie. There was this one scene I had to do a rewind when I was 16 because there was like this 12-year-old holding a gun, and I won't say what happened, but it did not end well. And I guess that's what happened in those areas, in that time period, those parts of the world. Another underlying theme, ultimately, City of God is a story about the human cost of violence and poverty, reminding viewers of the importance of empathy and understanding. This kind of can, like, get drawn back to why I love Sean Baker, is how he highlights on people that I guess we would overlook in our everyday lives. So this movie kind of highlights the tough realities that a lot of people are going through. It's not their fault that they live in these areas, and it's not everyone's fault that their area is being overrun by a lot of this corruption. So I think that's also very beautiful, especially with the main character, Rocket, who really is, I guess, our protagonist of this film. It is just a great movie. And again, I was not drawn in on my first watch, so I'm not saying that can happen for everyone because I don't know all, but I think this movie is definitely worth your time. I think the underlying themes and just the realities of everything make it such an incredible movie. I think the title, not that this is really relevant, but I think the title is awesome, City of God. If anyone knows, they have the Christ the Redeemer statue in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. I don't know why, but I feel like a catchy title is something that sticks with you, and City of God just stuck with me. I think the title's pretty cool. Not that you can judge a book by its cover, but title's cool and the movie's good. So it's a win-win. But that basically wraps up my number two pick, City of God, taking home the silver medal of the Uncapped Best International Feature of all time. Again, I might get some hate from that pick because a lot of people love City of God. If you like movies that are loosely based on true events, crime, I would say a little coming of age, that's definitely the movie for you. I want to say that you can watch this movie on Netflix. I could be wrong, but if anyone has the time, you should definitely stream that for free on Netflix because it is a great, great watch. All right, friends, the time has come for my personal favorite best international feature film of all time. Before we get into the gold medal pick, I want to give an honorable mention to Come and See. I just posted a TikTok on this, so shout out the Uncapped Pod TikTok at The Real Uncapped Pod. Come and See, 1985 Russian film. I want to say, yes, directed by Elem Kilmov. Great movie showing the rough depiction of what happened in some of these poor Belarusian areas during World War II when German forces came and occupied some of these areas. It was beyond disturbing as you go from beginning to end. But again, I think this movie is going to stick with me for a while. It was unsettling in the sense of these scenarios did happen in real life, so it does stop and make you think. but as a film aspect, it was a great watch. I think there were a lot of Easter eggs and metaphors throughout the film as well. I'm not going to spoil it because I feel like if I say what some of those Easter eggs and metaphors are, then it's not going to compel anyone to watch if you already know. But basically, I will never watch this movie again just for the sole purpose of once is enough. It's one of those films that everyone needs to see at least one point in their life. It's going to stick with you, but it is great. Absolutely 5 stars from me. So that is our honorable mention. And now for the gold place winner for Uncapped Best International Feature Film of All Time, I am crowning this award to Hakiri from 1962, this Japanese film. It was amazing. I don't want to hear anyone rolling their eyes that I picked a film from 1962 that is in black and white and in Japanese, but it is incredible. Hakiri by Masaki Kobayashi from 1962. I discovered this movie on Letterboxd just last week. I think I watched this last Saturday. The film was rated so highly, so I just had to see what the hype was about. Naturally, it had 4.7 on Letterboxd community rating and reviews, and the movie absolutely delivered. I know I just said that the film was in black and white, and obviously since our theme is international films, it is not in English, but do not be discouraged since the film's rather old. It is a great way to broaden anyone's horizon, their movie watching horizon, because this film is just such a pioneer of cinema in terms of cinematography, storytelling, choreography with the action-packed scenes. Truly the last 30 minutes of this movie is art at its finest. I would pay someone if we can rent out a theater at AMC or just anywhere if they would put this movie back in theaters for a limited time just so I can watch those last 30 minutes on the big screen. It was phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. The plot is basically about aging samurai Hanshiro. I won't pronounce his last name because I'm probably gonna butcher it. He arrives at the home of this samurai clan and asks to commit a ritual of suicide on the property, which is called the title Harakiri, which this elder thinks is a ploy to gain pity and a job. So the elder of this samurai clan tells Hanshiro of another samurai, Motome, who threatened suicide as a strategy only to be forced to follow through with the harakiri task and had to kill himself in front of everyone. As the plot and movie unravel, you just see so many plot twists, and then I think the action just increases. I think it's paced beautifully and just perfect. It starts out slow in all the right ways, and then you're getting wrapped up in dissecting the flashbacks and the storyline. And then towards the last act of the movie, my heart was just pounding, blood pumping. It just leaves you on the edge of your seat with the action, how it was shot. It is phenomenal. And like I just said, who doesn't love a plot twist? It is amazing. All right, little fun fact for everyone. Funny enough, while this movie is categorized as a samurai movie, the main premise is actually anti-samurai, as the film explores the hypocrisy and inhumanity of the samurai code during this time period, because it was meant to be set in the 1600s. And it just reveals how the pursuit of honor can become a tool for oppression and control over villages and people during this time period. And this main character, Hanshiro, ultimately questions the true meaning of honor and the nature of authority when he goes through personal hardships and relies on the samurai, only for the samurai clan to let them down. If I can go back and watch this movie for the first time, I absolutely would. Again, don't be discouraged because it's in black and white and it's not in English if you are an English speaker. I personally am not a big black and white girl. I do watch a ton of black and white movies, but if I had to pick, I would obviously pick a movie in color. But this might be one of my favorite films of all time. Not in my Letterboxd top four, but it is definitely up there. It is just great. Anyone that is an aspiring person in the career of film, it is definitely a movie to watch to encourage you. And also, if you just, like I said, want to broaden your movie horizon, I think this is a classic that you should watch. Oh, it also kind of aligns with Kill Bill, my recommendation for this week, little samurai movie. It was just phenomenal. I keep saying it over and over again. I'm gassing up this movie, but it was so good. And that's why Harakiri deserves the title of Uncapped's gold medal for best international feature film of all time. I loved it. If you watch it, I'm pretty sure you'll love it too. Now that really wraps up today's main segment, since I wanted this episode to kind of surround what I was watching this week, which were international films. I recently got this streaming service called Mubi. It's a little expensive, but it shows a lot of kind of festival films, a lot of international films, something that are made by independent creators and directors. And I don't know, I felt inspired watching all those movies, and I wanted to do an episode surrounding it, and hopefully that some people listening, their eyes will be open to the world and beauty of international films. I know it might be a drag for some people, this episode, and just the idea of watching international films in general, because it might not resonate with someone who doesn't want to read their movie, as some people would say. But personally, I just think some of the best movies I've ever seen are ones where I don't understand the language and I have to read subtitles. And I think it's an important part of appreciating all kinds of cinema from wherever. So hopefully this opened up some people's eyes, and I hope everyone takes a watch at maybe some of the movies I listed, or just any of your own choosing. If you do, or if you feel differently about my list, I'd really love to hear some feedback on what people consider the best international film or best international films of all time. As we wrap up today's episode, just want to let everyone know what movies I plan on seeing this week. I think that's how I'm kind of going to end the episode, just for some other movie recommendations. I plan on seeing in theaters at a local theater. I haven't been anywhere besides AMC in a while because I am an A-lister, but this will be good to support your local theaters like I've been kind of preaching. I plan on seeing No Other Land. This movie got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes and took home the award for Best Documentary at the Oscars. It is about the conflict with Palestine and Israel, so I'm very interested to see how this documentary is going to pan out. And I hope everyone watches a nice movie this week. Go to the theater. We got some good movies coming out this week. I plan on seeing A24's newest movie with Io Dribi, Opus. Everyone should check that out. And lastly, follow the TikTok. I'm trying to build that kind of portfolio at The Real Uncapped Podcast. We're going to go over movies that I watch in present time and reviews and just maybe some overall film controversy opinions, anything regarding cinema. You know, I just love to talk about it. So thanks for listening to episode 3. Next week, we're going to be back with episode 4. We're going to do some weekly episodes with some themes. I'm thinking a little Studio Ghibli. I'm thinking Quentin Tarantino for the future weeks. And that's about it. So everyone, thanks for listening and enjoy.